the opposite wall of the barn. I could feel him staring at me, even with my back to him. I nodded. That may be, but we need to figure out who this barn belongs to.
Do you like her?
He asked. Like her? I love her. She's sweet and tender, not to mention gorgeous. I moved my hand to her forehead, dragging it to her ears and pull. She let me as if she'd known me her whole lifetime.
Reminds me of someone.
Please don't tell me you're comparing me to livestock now, I laughed, surprised to find out that I had mist in my eyes. I imagined she belonged to a young girl. She looked young herself. Maybe they'd grow up together.
What should I compare you to, then?
He pushed off the wall, striding to me, my back still to him. I heard the hay crunching under his feet. I took a deep breath, closing my eyes and savoring his touch as his arms wrapped around my midriff from behind. People, I whispered.
I can't compare you to people. There aren't any people like you.
He said simply, his mouth on my neck now. Heat gathered in my belly, and I felt myself shuddering with pleasure that broke on my skull and rushed all the way down to my toes.
It's yours,
he snarled in my ear, his teeth grazing my lobe. What?
The horse. It's yours. This barn is mine. All this land, 3 miles each way from the cabin, belongs to us. The previous owner had a barn, took his horses with him when he sold it to my parents.
His dead parents. There was so much I didn't know about him yet. So much he kept from me.
Before I married you, I didn't want to give you a wedding gift. But after I married you, I realized you deserve much more than diamonds.
I turned around, blinking at him. I knew I should thank him, hug him, kiss him, love him even harder for his effort, which I knew by now did not come naturally to him. The idea of loving him so openly was startling. He held all the knowledge about every piece of my life, yet I knew nothing about him. Perhaps you don't need to know a person in order to love them. You only need to know their heart. And Wolf's heart was far bigger than I'd previously imagined. He stared at me, waiting for a response. When I opened my mouth, the most unexpected words came out. We can't keep her here. She'll be lonely. For a moment, he didn't say anything before closing his eyes and plastering his forehead to mine, his lips locking on my own. He sighed. Warm breath skating between my lips.
How are you so compassionate?
He mumbled into my mouth. I clutched the collar of his jacket and drew him to me, kissing the corner of his lips.
We'll take her somewhere on the outskirts of Chicago where you can visit her weekly, somewhere with lots of horses and hay and ranchers who will take care of her and stay firmly away from you. Ugly ranchers, he added, with no teeth.
I laughed. Thank you.
What do you want to call her?
He asked. Artemis, I answered, somehow knowing what her name was before I even really thought about it.
The goddess of wildlife. Quite fitting.
He kissed my nose extra carefully, then my forehead, then my lips. We drank our beers, and I ate brownies next to Artemis, sitting on the hay. I'd eaten in the last few days more than I had in the month before. My appetite was returning, and that was a good sign.
I've wanted to become a lawyer since I was 13 years old, he said,
and I stopped breathing altogether. He was confiding in me, opening up. This was huge. This was everything.
The world is an unfair place. It does not reward you for being good or decent or moral, but for being talented, driven, and cunning. Those things are not necessarily positive, and none of them, not even talent, is a virtue. I wanted to protect those who needed protection, but the more I worked on cases, the more I realized that the system was corrupted. Becoming a lawyer in hopes to bring justice is like cleaning a ketchup stain on a bloodied shirt of a man who just got stabbed 50 times. So I went higher.
Why are you so obsessed with justice?
Because your father robbed me out of mine. I understand that your childhood has been sheltered. I can even respect your father for sending you to boarding school and distancing you from the mess he's created in Chicago. But this mess, I grew up in it. I had to survive in it. It left me scarred and wronged.
What are you going to do with my father?
I'm going to ruin him.
I swallowed. And with me? What are you going to do with me?
Save you.
After a while, I became drowsy from the beer and sugar. I propped my head against his chest and closed my eyes. He took out his phone and let me nap atop of him, very unlike my husband. Since he had no reception, I didn't know what he was going to do with his phone, but part of me wanted to test the limit of his patience, to see when he was going to shake me gently and tell me it was time to get going. I woke up an hour later in a tiny pool of my drool on his shirt. He was still messing with his phone. I glanced at his screen, trying not to move. He was reading an article offline, probably a document he'd downloaded in advance. I stirred lightly to let him know that I was awake.
We should head back.
I took one glance at Artemis, who was sleeping peacefully in her stall, and yawned. We should, I agreed. But I love it too much here. Then, without thinking, I tilted my head up and pressed a kiss to his lips. He dropped his phone, taking me in his arms and positioning me with careful precision on his lap to straddle him. I felt immediately more powerful and awake than I had been in weeks, linking my arms around his neck and deepening our kiss. I began to grind against his erection, without even thinking about what I was doing. I wasn't on the pill yet, never got the chance to book that appointment, and I knew, now more than ever, that our first time was an angry fluke. Wolf didn't want children, and I certainly didn't want to have them without his wishes, especially not at 19. I'd just started school. I said between kisses. We need a condom. I'm not protected.
I'll pull out.
He kissed his way down my cleavage, opening the buttons of my navy blue polka dot dress. I pulled away, cupping his face, still in awe that I could do so. Even I know that's not a valid form of contraception. He grinned, his teeth a row of straight, pearly whites. He was excruciatingly beautiful. I didn't know how I was going to survive it if he took another Emily to his bed in this lifetime. We were no longer two strangers sharing a roof. We were entwined and entangled, connected with invisible strings, each of us trying to pull away, only to create more knots that made us closer. And he was so sophisticated and quick-witted, I didn't know how I could keep him, even if I wanted to. Dearly.
Francesca, you're not going to get pregnant from one time.
That's a myth, and one we can't believe right now. I persisted. It's not that I didn't want to become a mother. It's that I didn't want to become a mother to an unwanted baby. I still held on to some foolish hope he'd change his mind with time when he realized that we could be happy together. Plus, there was something so horribly degrading about taking that Plan B pill that he had left for me. I felt like he had rejected me and what my body had to offer.
When's your period? He asked.
I blinked. On the first week of the month.
Then you're fine. You shouldn't even be ovulating right now.
How do you know this? I laughed, raking my fingers over his chest, frantic for some reason.
My brother's wife.
He stopped, a mask of icy difference sliding over his face. He was not supposed to say that. I was not supposed to know that he had a brother, and that the brother had a wife. I blinked at him, desperate for him to continue. He swallowed, put me down carefully, then stood up, offering me his hand.
You're right. Let's go, Nem.
I took it, knowing we had quite the problem. He didn't want to let me in. And I could no longer purge him out. In the cabin, Wolf threw logs into the fireplace while I speared marshmallows onto sticks. I showed him how to make a s'mores train, which is basically a huge ongoing sandwich of s'mores still on the stick. I taught all my friends in Switzerland how to do it, and some of the parents were livid, sending angry letters to the school's administrator. They said their daughters gained a lot of weight since I showed them the trick, and that they had to have their fireplaces cleaned on a weekly basis.
A rebel, then, he grinned at me. Could have fooled me with your hint of British boarding school accent and impeccable manners.
Oh, I was never a rebel, I said seriously, pushing back the nagging worry that he chose me because I made a well-bred potential first lady. I mostly stayed out of trouble, though. It was just this incident, and when I accidentally set a teacher's toupee on fire. I laughed in Wolf's arms, feeling more relaxed and happy than I ever had before. He drew me close to him and kissed me again, a serious kiss, from the variety that told me that the conversational portion of the night was officially over. He flattened me on my back in front of the fireplace as the fire danced in orange and yellow, giving the room a cozy and romantic air, even though it was extravagantly luxurious. The rustic furniture, top-notch appliances, and rich leather, deep brown sofas with the huge wool throws were a perfect setting to what I so badly wanted to happen. We were on the wooden floor, lying over a knitted rug with Wolf on top of me. He growled into my mouth and slid his hand into the hem of my panties under my dress, his fingers teasing my opening, and any trace of logic flew out the window. I found myself bucking my groin toward his hand, asking for more as he devoured my neck. Bracing himself on his knees, he opened the front buttons of my dress with his free hand while he still played with my arousal. When he got to the last button, he slid the dress off me, his eyes raking over my body, stripping me from my inhibitions.
"You're beautiful," he whispered. "Worthy of every single compliment and flattery I've heard about you before the masquerade. I said I wanted to see for myself, but I never mentioned. You smashed every single fucking expectation I've ever had."
I blinked away the tears, touching his face everywhere, claiming him somehow by doing so. "Please make love to me."
Not sex. Not fuck. Not screw.
Love, love, love. Make love to me, my heart silently begged.
He kissed my lips, moving his mouth to my nipples and suckling on one of them, applying gradual pressure with his teeth and tongue. He teased and sucked on my tits, then traced my folds with his fingers, borrowing my wetness and using it to circle my nub in delicious rounds of pleasure.
"Just please do it already," I whimpered, my fingers running through his dark hair as he kissed and leisurely licked the inside of my thighs and the sensitive place between them. "I need you inside me."
"Why?"
"I can't explain."
"Yes, you can. You're just afraid to."
Wolf Keaton was a kiss thief, but it wasn't only a kiss that he stole. He stole my heart, too, ripped it from my chest and put it in his pocket. I did what he promised me I would do, and willingly I spread my legs and begged him once again, this time meaning every word. "Because you were right. You said I'd come to your bed willingly, and I am. So take me." He kissed me dirty, biting down on my tender lower lip that was still sore from the accident.
Still not the entire truth, but this'll do.
He rose on his forearms, reaching for his wallet and taking out a condom. I swallowed down my disappointment. He pulled back, scanning my face.
What's wrong?
Nothing. He was about to chuck my chin before thinking the better of it and running his thumb along my jawline.
We're past the point of lying to each other. Spill.
My eyes drifted to the condom. I thought the first time, our real first time, would be more personal. My face heated as I said that because I realized that I berated him for suggesting the exact same thing mere hours ago. Can you?
I'll finish out.
He shut me up with a kiss.
We won't make a habit until you're on the pill. Deal?
I nodded. He tossed the condom on the carpet, his eyes staring deep into mine as he eased into me. I involuntarily tensed before he lowered himself to kiss my mouth.
Relax for me.
I took a deep breath, doing as I was told. Halfway through the penetration, it started to hurt, but in a very different way than last time. This time, it was a delicious pain as he stretched me from within, allowing me the time to accommodate his girth by kissing me in between. He showered me with words that gave me courage and strength, words I believed with every piece of my soul.
You're as graceful as rain, beautiful as the starless Chicago sky on a sad masquerade night. You feel so good, Nemesis. I would drown in you and die if you don't stop me.
It was oceans away from the last time he commented about my tightness, which felt dirty and degrading. I clutched his shoulders, moaning softly and cradling him, my body slowly mirroring his until the discomfort was replaced by lusty, jerky rolls of my hips. I purred into his ear as he drove faster into me, bracing himself on his hands, determined not to touch my ribs and forehead, not to hurt me. Then his thrusts became so deep and feral, I knew he was close. I sank my nails into the flesh of his back, feeling the climax rising within my belly too. It was different than all the times he licked me. Deeper, more profound.
Gonna come now, Nem.
He was about to pull out when I clung to him for a fierce kiss, and I felt him emptying inside me. The warm, sticky, thick liquid filling me from the inside. We held on to each other for a long moment before he rolled off me. This time, there was no shame and distress. I didn't look away. He didn't cradle his face and wish he could crawl into a crack in the floor and die. Our heads were tilted toward one another, both of us on the carpet by the fire. He chucked me under the chin. You finished inside. I licked my lips. He yawned and stretched at the same time, not looking particularly worried, and that worried me. I'm not taking another pill, I said, shaking my head as I held my dress to my chest. It's not healthy.
Sweetheart.
His eyes crinkled as he looked at me.
As I said before, the dates don't add up.
Screw the dates.
Can I screw you instead?
I laughed. Fine, I'm taking your word for it.
As you should.
He chucked my chin again. Stop doing that, Wolf. I told you, it makes me feel like a kid. He stood up, completely naked, and hoisted me over his shoulder, careful not to touch my ribs, then carried me to the master bedroom, planting a teasing slap on my butt cheek before biting on it softly. What are you doing? I laughed breathlessly.
Some very grown-up things to you.
We spent the night in the same bed, going through 3 condoms. The morning after, we checked on Artemis again. She was happy to see us, and I took her for a quick ride, surprised with the minimal discomfort having sex 4 times last night had caused me. We gave her food and water and sat by her side in the barn. That morning, in the barn with Artemis as our audience, Wolf taught me how to perform oral sex on a man. He lowered me to my knees, stood up, unzipped his dark diesels, and took himself out. At first, he taught me how to stroke it, then how to squeeze it. When I felt comfortable enough, he asked if I wanted to put it in my mouth. Yes. I looked down at the hay, swallowing down my shame.
Look at me, Francesca.
I looked up, blinking at his gray eyes.
There's nothing wrong with what you're about to do. You know that, right?
I nodded, but I didn't actually believe it. I was pretty certain every single person I went to church with, including my own parents, would have a heart attack if they knew what we were doing. What if people find out? He laughed. The bastard full-blown laughed.
Everyone you know older than 18 has had oral sex, Francesca.
I didn't.
And thank fuck for that.
Surely he was just telling me what I wanted to hear. Wolf probably read the doubt on my face because he stroked the side of my cheek and sighed.
Do you think I'm a pervert? He asked.
What? I felt my face heating. No, of course not.
Good. Because I eat your pussy every day, have been for weeks now, and plan to do so for the rest of my life. You giving your husband pleasure is nothing to be ashamed of.
But you said oral sex is degrading. I licked my lips, tossing his words from when we were engaged to the air between us.
It's degrading to kneel, in general. It is not degrading to kneel for someone who is worth your pride.
I knew Wolf was not one to talk lightly about pride. He was, after all, the Narcissus to my nemesis. Whatever made him clutch to his pride like this had scarred him thoroughly. I wrapped my lips around his engorged head, feeling his hand guiding mine around the base of his shaft, before he put his hand over the back of my head and slowly dragged my mouth along his girth until his crown touched the back of my throat. I wanted to gag, but held back.
Now suck on it.
He sank his fingers into my hair and clutched my roots hard. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed sucking his cock. I not only enjoyed the act and the velvety, warm skin, but also his unique, manly scent and the way he responded to it, jerking in my mouth and letting out desperate groans. My jaw and lips hurt by the time he held my hair and pulled out of me, tilting my head up and making me look deep into his eyes.
You know I respect you, he said gruffly.
I know. I murmured, my lips swollen and sensitive.
Good, because for the next 5 seconds, it's going to look like I don't.
He squeezed his length and shot his cum all over my face and breasts. The warm liquid slithering down my cheek. It was thick and slimy, but oddly enough, not degrading. All I could feel was more lust, and my womb clenching against nothing, begging for something that my husband had. I licked the cum from the corner of my lips and looked back up to him, smiling. He smiled back.
I think we're going to get along fine, my dear wife.
Chapter 15. Francesca. I woke up with the same terrible craving, a sweet tooth that wouldn't go away. I feel like a strawberry milkshake. No, I need one. Bad. I rolled from my side of the bed and bumped into hard abs, groaning as I cracked one eye open. 5 weeks after our retreat to Lake Michigan, and I'd found out some interesting facts about my new life with Senator Wolf Keaton. For one thing, I very much enjoyed waking my husband up with a blowjob. For another, he thoroughly enjoyed my new role as his human alarm. I kissed my way down his stomach, following the happy trail of dark hair, and lowered his gray sweatpants with his college name on them. Once I had him in my mouth, he stirred awake. But unlike the other times, he flung the blankets off of us and pulled me by my hair, gentle but firm.
Not gonna cut it today, I'm afraid.
He threw me back on the mattress, so I was on all fours, retrieving a condom from the nightstand. I still wasn't on the pill. I was supposed to book an appointment as soon as we got back from Lake Michigan, but I was embarrassed to go by myself, knowing I'd get checked down there. I didn't want to go with Ms. Sterling, and knew that Mama and Clara did not believe in contraception in general. I called Andrea 3 times, and she said that she'd have loved to come with me, but my father would kill her if she was seen with me in public. It's not personal, Frankie. You know that, right? I did. I knew that. Hell, I couldn't even blame her. I feared my father just as much at some point. This left me with asking my husband to come with. When I heavily hinted at appreciating his company over dinner that week, he dismissed me and said I could go on my own. What if it hurts? I asked him. He shrugged.
My being there won't take away the pain.
It was BS, and he knew it. The next day, he came back from work with a huge package of condoms and a receipt from Costco. Wolf threw the no-sleeping-together rule out the window. We still had our clothes and belongings in separate wings of the house, but we always spent the entire night together. Most nights, he came to my room, holding me close after making love to me. But sometimes, especially on days he worked very late, I entered his domain and served him in his bed. We began to attend galas and charity events together. We became that couple, the couple I always thought Angelo and I would be. People watched us with open fascination as we flirted with each other at our dinner table. Wolf would always have his hand on mine, press a kiss to my lips, and behave like the perfect gentleman that he was. A far cry from the sarcastic, taunting bastard who dragged me to Bishop's son's wedding. I even began to lower my guard when it came to other women. In fact, Senator Keaton showed no interest in any of them, even though the offers kept pouring in, including, but not limited to, panties I'd found in our mailbox. Ms. Sterling was outraged and disgusted. She waved the pair of thongs all the way to the trash bin. And endless business cards Wolf and I found ourselves emptying from his pocket at the end of every night. Life with Wolf was good. Between school, horseback riding with Artemis, my garden, and the piano lessons I resumed, I had very little time to sit and ponder over my father's next chess move. Mama came over every week, and we gossiped, drank tea, and flipped through fashion magazines, something she enjoyed and I couldn't stand, but I humored her. My husband never showed any opposition to having Mama or Clara over. In fact, he often invited them to stay longer, and Ms. Sterling and Clara really seemed to hit it off, sharing their love for daytime soap operas and even sneakily trading romance books with each other. I bumped into Angelo a few times at school after Lake Michigan. He was taking classes, too, though we didn't have any together. I was pretty sure that could never happen, not when my husband was so acutely aware of his presence at Northwestern. I felt the need to apologize for what happened the day of my wedding, and he waved it off and told me that it wasn't my fault, which might have been true, but that didn't make me feel any less guilty. At the same time, I could understand why Wolf didn't want Angelo and me to maintain our friendship, seeing as I was silly in love with him when we'd first met. Angelo, however, wasn't a fan of my husband's opinion. Every time we met at the cafeteria or local coffee shop, he'd strike up lengthy conversations with me and fill me in on every little detail from my old neighborhood. I snickered when he told me who got married, who got divorced, and that Emily, our Emily, was seeing a Bostonian mobster from New York, Irish no less. Good Lord, I made a scandalized face. He laughed.
Thought you should know, in case you were still wondering about me and her goddess.
Goddess. My husband was stoic, powerful, and ruthless. Angelo was sweet and confident and forgiving. They were night and day, summer and winter, and I was beginning to realize I knew where I belonged, in the storm with Wolf. One conscious decision I took in order to maintain my blissful life with my husband was not to open the wooden box. Technically, I needed to do that a long time ago, right after my wedding to Wolf. But I only had one note left, and Wolf turned out to be the rightful owner of my heart with both previous notes. I didn't want to ruin his perfect strike. Not when I was so close to happiness I could almost feel it at my fingertips. Now I was feeling woozy and drowsy, still craving the milkshake, but also dangling my butt in my husband's face, wanting him to satisfy my other need. Wolf entered me from behind, sheathed and fully erect.
My sweet poison, my gorgeous rival.
He kissed the back of my neck as he drove into me from behind. I purred. When he finished inside me, he took off his condom, tied it up, and strolled to the bathroom, completely naked. I collapsed on his bed face down, a heap of warm flesh and lust. He emerged 10 minutes later, freshly shaven, showered, and already getting dressed in a full suit. By the time I rolled on my back to take a look at him, he had a tie on. "I want a strawberry milkshake," I pouted. He frowned, flipping his tie and tying it without even looking at a mirror.
"You don't normally have a sweet tooth."
"I'm about to get my period." It was, in fact, a little overdue.
"I'll have Smithy get you one before I go to work. You good for school? Need a ride?"
I was due to take my driver's test next week. "I don't want Smithy to get me a milkshake. I want you to get me one." I rose on my knees, walking on them across the bed and toward him. He always screws my orders up.
"What's to screw up in ordering a strawberry milkshake?"
Wolf returned to his bathroom to put some of the delicious-smelling product in his hair. One day, I was going to have a heart attack with how attractive he was and how tantalizing he smelled. "You'd be surprised," I lied. "Smithy was great. I just had an irrational need to have my husband do something nice for me. Since Artemis, he was careful not to show any signs of romantic gestures."
"I'll get you your milkshake,"
he said in no particular tone, leaving the room. "Thank you," I called out. A moment later, Ms. Sterling, the number one eavesdropper in North America, popped her head into the room.
"You two are the thickest, smart people I know."
She shook her head. I was still lying on the bed, staring at the ceiling, basking in my post-orgasm bliss. The sheets were wrapped around my body, but I wasn't particularly worried about what she saw. She must have heard us hundreds of times by now doing what married couples did.
"What do you mean?"
I stretched lazily, stifling a yawn.
"You're pregnant, my sweet, foolish child."
"No, it's not happening. It can't happen."
"Only it can. It must, and it makes so much sense." The words looped in my head when I paid for my pregnancy test at Walgreens before I went to school. I devoured the strawberry milkshake as if my life depended on it, only to feel terribly nauseous afterwards, and I had a bad feeling, even before I crouched down and peed on the stick in the restrooms of my school, that Ms. Sterling was right. I swore under my breath. I could use Andrea right now. Someone to hold me when it was time to flip that stick and check the results. But Andrea was scared of my dad, and it was time to find and make new friends outside of the outfit. Putting the cap back on the test and setting my phone to count down the minutes, I pressed my forehead against the door. I knew two things for certain. One, I didn't want to be pregnant. Two, I didn't want to not be pregnant. If I were pregnant, I'd have a huge problem on my hands. My husband did not want kids. He told me so himself. Quite a few times, actually. He even went so far as suggesting I'd live in a different place and get a sperm donor if I cared so much for children. Bringing an unwanted baby into the world was immoral, if not completely deranged, considering our circumstances. But then, oddly, not being with child was also going to leave me disappointed, because there was excitement and anticipation in finding out that I was carrying Wolf's baby. My mind took me to insane places, places I had no business visiting. What eye color would our child have? They would have dark hair, slim build like both of us, but gray or blue, tall or short. And would they have his wit and my talent with the piano? Would they be ivory and snow like my pale skin? Or would they have his rather tan complexion? I wanted to know everything. I resisted the urge to drag my palm over my stomach, imagining it getting swollen and round and perfect, carrying the fruit of our love. The fruit of my love. No one ever said that he loved me. No one even suggested that. Not even Ms. Sterling. My phone beeped, and I jumped, my heart stuttering in my chest. No matter the result, I wanted to get it over with. I flipped the pregnancy test over and blinked back. Two lines. Blue. Sharp. Prominent. Strong. I was pregnant. I broke into tears. I couldn't believe it was happening to me. Wolf asked. No, he strictly stated he didn't want any children. And now, not even 6 months after our wedding, when we finally hit our stride, I was going to tell him that I was with child. A part of me pointed out, quite reasonably, that this wasn't entirely my fault. He was to blame, too. In fact, he was the one who tried to coax me into having unprotected sex in the first place, with the nonsense about pulling out. Great job with that one. And calculating the dates and telling me I wasn't ovulating. Only both of us didn't take into consideration the fact that my period had changed the minute I took the Plan B pill. Then again, I was the one who drew him close when he came inside me, preventing him, albeit by accident, from pulling out. I knew that there was no other occasion in which this might have happened. Save for the weekend at the cabin, we always used condoms. Shoulders sagging, I got out of the bathroom, dragging myself down the corridor, out of the college, and into the unassuming autumn day. I needed to confide in Ms. Sterling. She'd know what to do. I was heading towards Smithy's car when Angelo tackled me to the grass out of nowhere. I yelped. The first thing I thought about was the baby. I pushed him off, watching as he laughed breathlessly, trying to tickle me. Angelo! Hysteria bubbled in my chest. Wasn't the first trimester the most crucial one? I couldn't afford to roll on the ground. Get off! He scrambled to his feet, rubbing his dark blonde hair and staring me down. Where was it coming from? Angelo was always reserved and respectful. He was always nice to me, true, but he never touched me like this in the weeks after I got married.
Jesus, goddess, sorry.
He offered me his hand, and I took it. I hated that he still called me goddess, but I guessed there were no laws against idle flirtation. Even though maybe there ought to be. That way, women wouldn't be able to proposition my husband every time he left the house. That way, you'd also live in an oppressive country. I stood up and looked around, not really sure what I was looking for. I cleaned my dress and cardigan free of grass blades.
It looked like you were having a bad day. I just wanted to make you laugh,
Angelo explained. How could I tell my sweet friend that he was absolutely right? I was having both the worst and the best day combined. I brushed a blade of grass from his shoulder, smiling. It's not your fault. I'm sorry I was snippy. I was just surprised.
Your driver is waiting for you on the other side of the lot. So are your executive protection agents, who, by the way, are doing a crappy job seeing as they're not with you right now.
Angelo wiggled his eyebrows, digging his finger into my shoulder muscles in a soothing massage. Wolf insisted I have bodyguards with me after the car chase. It was only this week that I had finally managed to convince him to break protocol and have the bodyguards stay in the car and leave me alone on school grounds. We hadn't heard from my father or Mike Bandini in a while. Apparently, they were busy trying to keep the outfit afloat and from Wolf's iron fist. And if I ever wanted to make friends at school, I couldn't have two men the size of elephants shadowing my every step. I didn't tell Angelo about what his father did. Unlike Wolf, I was good with making the separation between father and offspring. Maybe because I knew too well what it felt like to be embarrassed by your parents' actions. Thanks. I threw my bag over my shoulder, standing in front of him, awkward and guilt-stricken. He was making an effort, trying to rebuild that bridge that had burned between us, and I was standing on the other end with a match, ready to destroy it once again. But there was a delicacy in keeping my loyalty to my husband and patching things up with a boy who'd meant the world to me. A tightrope, I was too clumsy to walk.
I need to make a confession.
He messed with his tousled, beautiful hair. It hurt my heart to recognize what I refused to see in the beginning of my engagement to Wolf. That one day, Angelo would make an amazing husband to someone, but that someone wasn't going to be me. Go on, I rubbed my eyes. I never felt so tired in my life, and it's not like I missed an hour of sleep. He looked down now, shuffling from foot to foot, no longer confident and cocky.
The night of your engagement party, something happened. Something that shouldn't have happened.
He swallowed, his gaze becoming hooded. He took a deep breath.
The blonde chick from the masquerade was there. You just shut me down after I had this whole speech in my head about how the evening was going to play out. I fucked up and couldn't find my words, and you kept looking for your fiancé. I felt like my world was collapsing, one wall at a time.
He rubbed his cheek now as though he'd been slapped with the truth.
I made a mistake. A huge one. I slept with the reporter. Actually, that was only a small error. Not the terrible one. The terrible one occurred afterward when I met your husband on the stairs.
I looked up, searching his face. To my shock, I found Angelo blinking back tears. Actual tears. Tears I absolutely hated seeing there, even though I knew what he was about to tell me was nothing short of awful. That it ruined me in a lot of ways. Whatever Wolf and I were today, he could never erase the night he took my innocence by force. You told him we slept together? My voice trembled.
He shook his head. No, no, I wouldn't do that. I didn't exactly tell him it didn't happen either. I was busy trying to get back at him instead of clearing up what looked like a misunderstanding. I was so mad, Frankie, and a part of me still hoped that you guys were going to break up over it. I wanted to give fate a little push. I wasn't planning on ruining it for both of you. I mean, I was, but only because I thought you were on board. I thought you wanted to try giving him a chance because your parents pressured you. Not because, well,
because I love him. I finished, my voice hoarse. I squeezed his shoulder. He looked down at my hand and sniffed.
Yeah.
I do, I said, letting out an exasperated sigh. God, Angelo, I'm so sorry, but I do. I never planned on falling for him. It just happened. But that's the thing about love, isn't it? It's like death. You know it will happen one day,
You just don't know how, or why, or when. That's a rather dark view on life. He offered me a grim smile.
I couldn't be mad at Angelo. Not really. And especially when Wolf and I had overcome what he and Kristen threw at us. Some would even call it the pivotal moment of our entire relationship.
Still, Angelo grinned, his boyish dimples on full display. The same smile that broke my heart every time I saw it on his face, peeking under his dark lashes. If you ever change your mind, I'm here.
I'm compromised, I answered him with an arched brow, blushing. He sighed theatrically.
Believe it or not, goddess, so am I.
Get out! I slapped his chest, feeling the tension evaporating from my bones. When was your first time? With who? The question sat on the tip of my tongue for years, but up until now, I never had the chance to ask. We were trying the whole friendship thing now. Well, sort of.
Angelo let out a sharp exhale. Junior year. Cheryl Evans, after calc class.
Was she Little Miss Popular? I grinned.
Guess you could say that. She was the teacher, he deadpanned.
What? I choked on my laughter. You lost your virginity to your teacher?
She was like 23. No other girl that age would put out without a serious relationship, and I was getting antsy. I was also saving the whole real thing for you, he admitted.
It made me sad and happy at the same time, that life took us in a different direction, but that Angelo, whom I loved not too long ago, was on the same wavelength as I was.
Welp, he gave me two thumbs down, maybe in the next lifetime.
Last time he said it would happen in this one, I grinned. Almost definitely. We hugged, and I hurried across the lawn toward the line of double-parked vehicles full of college students bumming rides from one another, scanning the landscape for Smithy's shielded, brand-new Cadillac. This time, Wolf went above and beyond with all the accessories to make sure it was bulletproof. I spotted Smithy in the car, messing with his phone, and smiled to myself. Everything was going to be okay. Wolf might not respond to the news with enthusiasm, but I hoped he wouldn't be crushed, either. I was almost at the car when Kristen, the journalist, appeared out of thin air, jumping in front of me, looking haggard. Her hair was frizzy, and the bags under her eyes purplish from what I assumed was lack of sleep. My two executive protection agents got out of the car simultaneously, hurrying toward us. I raised my arm and waved them away.
It's okay.
Mrs. Keaton?
It's fine, I insisted.
Take a step back, please.
Kristen didn't even notice them. She zigzagged in place.
Francesca,
she slurred, pointing her finger in my general direction. She was too drunk to point it at me. I tried to remember where we left things off with her. Last I heard, Wolf said he got her fired. She was obviously feeling vindictive, but it had been weeks. Where have you been? I asked, trying not to scan her tattered shirt and dirty jeans. She waved a hand around, hiccuping.
Oh, here and there. Everywhere, really. Crashed at my parents' in Ohio. Came back here to try and look for a job. Called your husband hundreds of times to try and get me unblacklisted. And then... crap. Why am I telling you this anyway?
She laughed, flipping her greasy hair aside. I looked behind me to see if Angelo was around. She read my mind.
Relax, I just fucked your friend so Wolf would get mad at you. He's too young for me anyway.
And too good for you, I thought to myself.
Pregnancy obviously messed with my logic because I felt the urge to rub her arm or buy her a cup of coffee. I knew damn well that she tried to ruin my life to save hers and that she wanted my husband for herself, at least before he got her fired. But the thing about compassion was that it wasn't given to people who necessarily deserved it,
but needed it nonetheless. Obviously, my plan failed miserably.
She dragged her chipped fingernails over her cheeks, scanning my pristine white cardigan over my knee-length black dress.
You look like a fucking church girl.
I am a church girl. She snorted out a laugh.
He's a kinky bastard.
Or maybe he just likes me. I dug in an imaginary knife into her chest. She did, after all, try to make my husband believe that I cheated on him. No matter how dire her situation was, there was no need to be mean to me. I hadn't done anything to her.
Good one. Wolf just likes fucking something that belongs to Arthur Rossi. You know, because Arthur fucked with his family. Poetic justice and all that.
Excuse me? I took a step back, assessing her fully now. I'd had my fill of surprises today. Between the pregnancy test, Angelo's confession, and now this, I realized that the universe was trying to tell me something. Hopefully not that my fairy tale, which hadn't begun just yet, was ending abruptly. One of my bodyguards took a step forward, and I spun on him.
Stay away. Let her talk. He didn't tell you?
Kristen threw her head back and laughed, pointing at me, ridiculing me.
Did you ever wonder why he took you from your father? What he had on him?
I did. All the time. Hell, I asked Wolf about it on a daily basis. But, of course, admitting this to her was giving her more power than she deserved.
Kristen leaned her elbow over a huge oak tree, whistling. Where do I begin? This is all confirmed, by the way, so you can cross-examine your husband the minute you get back home. Wolf Keaton wasn't really born Wolf Keaton. He was born Fabio Nucci, a poor bastard Italian kid who lived not too far from your block. Same zip code, but trust me, very different houses. His mama was a drunk, neglectful excuse for a human being, and his father was out of the picture before he was even born. His older, much older, brother, Romeo, raised him. Romeo became a cop. He was doing a fine job until he was caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. Namely, Mama's Pizza, the little parlor 3 blocks down from you. Romeo went to get Wolf some pizza. They walked into a gunfight. Romeo, still clad in his uniform, burst through the back of the parlor to break things off. They had to kill him, or he'd have outed all of them. Your father killed Romeo in front of your husband, despite his desperate pleas.
I never beg. I never kneel. I have my pride.
Wolf's words came back to haunt me, making my skin dampen and chill. That was why he was so adamant on not negotiating or showing remorse or mercy. My father didn't spare him any of those things when he needed them the most. I stared at Kristen, knowing there was more, knowing that was the tip of a very thick, very lethal iceberg. She continued.
After that happened, he was adopted by the Keatons, a rich family from the right side of the tracks. The same house you live in right now, in fact. The Keatons were Chicago's finest, a high-profiled couple who never had any children and had the world to give him. They changed his name to separate him from the mess that was his early life. Things were looking up for little Wolfie for a minute there. He even managed to overcome the severe trauma of seeing your father putting a bullet between his brother's eyes.
Why didn't my father deal with Wolf, since he watched too? I hated that I was asking her questions, but unlike my husband, my pride was not as vital for my survival. Kristen huffed.
Wolf was just a kid back then. He didn't know the key players and didn't have an open beef with the outfit like his brother. Not to mention, no one was going to believe him. Plus, I guess even your father has some morals.
She scanned me with disgust. My jaw tensed, but I said nothing, too afraid she'd stop talking.
Anyway, she sing-songed, can you guess what happened next?
No, I gritted out, but I bet you'll be happy to tell me. I knew that she was telling the truth, not because Kristen wasn't capable of lying, but because she was having too much fun delivering the news for it not to be accurate.
Wolf goes off to college, makes friends, lives his best life, so to speak. Second year at Harvard, he's about to come back for summer vacation when the ballroom where his parents are attending a charity gala explodes with a ton of politicians and high-end diplomats inside. Any guesses who's responsible for it?
My father, of course. I remembered that incident. One summer when I was 8, we didn't go to Italy. My father was arrested for the ballroom incident and released shortly after for lack of evidence. My mother was crying all the time, and her friends were always around. When Dad got out, they started fighting. A lot. Maybe that was the moment my mother realized she didn't marry a good man. In the end, they decided that the best course of action would be to send me to boarding school. I knew they were protecting me from my father's reputation here in Chicago and giving me my best shot. Kristen whistled again, shaking her head.
Suffice it to say, your husband did not return from that trauma. The problem was, officially and on paper, the blowout was the result of a gas leak. The entire hotel chain shut down soon after. Your father's arrest was a farce. They couldn't even send him to trial, even though everyone knew he got back at Wolf's mother, a Supreme Court judge, for ruling against one of his best friends.
Lorenzo Florence. He was still in prison. He smuggled over 500 kilograms of heroin into the U.S., working for my father. I stumbled back, collapsing to the grass. My bodyguards had had enough. They both started in my direction. Kristen pushed off the tree, squatting to my eye level and smiling brightly.
So now, Wolf really wants to get back at your father and gather ammo against him. He's been doing that ever since he graduated, actually. Through private investigators and endless resources, he managed to find something on your father. Whatever it is, he is hanging it over his head. You know the endgame was always to kill your father, right?
I couldn't answer. They dragged me toward the car while I kicked and screamed. I wanted to stay and listen. I wanted to run away.
He'll be the heir to the outfit, Kristen yelled, running after us.
One of the bodyguards pushed her, but she was having too much fun.
He doesn't want the outfit, I screamed back to her. He'll discard you just as he's always planned. Have you ever wondered why he never bothered to have you sign a prenup? Don't be so sure you'll get out of this in one piece. It's not like anyone from Wolf's family did.
No, you're wrong. I felt my lower lip trembling. They ducked me into the back seat of the vehicle and slammed the door behind me. I felt dizzy and nauseous. I was too physically weak and emotionally shocked to cope with these revelations. Kristen appeared at the window and signaled for me to roll it down. One of the EPAs nearly beat her off from inside the car, but I rolled the window down anyway. She pushed her head into the car.
He'll throw you out by the end of the year, sweetheart. Once he's had enough of fucking you, I've seen it happen 1,000 times before. Wolf Keaton doesn't do love, sweetie.
Maybe not with you, I bit back. She frowned, looking wounded.
You're delusional, she said.
And you're desperate. How did you find out this information?
She shrugged, a bitter smile spreading on her face like margarine. Easy, but toxic. I didn't have to ask again. I knew. My father.
That night, when Wolf arrived at my bed to bring me the dinner I'd missed, I turned him away. I wasn't ready to face him, and I definitely wasn't ready to tell him about the pregnancy. I knew deep down that Kristen was at least partly right.